Curtis Lewa.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Lewa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Lewa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Lewa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Lewa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Lewa. What happened today, why, and what's next? Live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour of 5, yours truly, Curtis Lewa, taking you home on the drive home at 5 as well. High atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided for us to do this broadcast to all of you on 50,000 powerful watts of sound by NJDiet.com. Just 5 days away from spring, as you know. March came in like a lion and is looking like it's going to leave as a lion. As the winds and the gusting snow flurries and such are causing mishigash in your life, you're wondering, gee whiz, will there be a spring solstice? There is no spring solstice. So just calm down, huh? Calm down. Secondarily, tonight we will be hosting here on Stage 17 at the Hackensack Meridian Health Center the first New York State gubernatorial debate. That's right. There have been candidate forums. They get a chance to tell you who they are and what they're going to do. And then they take questions from the audience. But they're never able to get in on with one another. These are the men and women who would be taking on Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Brutta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, as he has been weakened with the recent conviction of his wartime consigliere, his legbreaker, Joe Pococo, on 3 of 6 corruption charges. But as we go to the news wheel, earlier today, we saw that a bridge had collapsed in the Miami area, resulting in many injuries and deaths. And in order to sort of catch up to that and also the walkout that took place at the high school in Parkland that led to a national walkout of high schools across America, is Joyce Kaufman, radio host on WFTL in Miami. Thanks for jumping on board again, Joyce.
I wish I could say it was my pleasure, but every time you call me, it's like a tragedy.
Yeah, so explain this. When I first heard it, I'm assuming, oh no, a bridge across maybe one of the many causeways of Miami. But this is not that kind of bridge, is it?
No. It was a 174-foot 950-ton bridge that was for pedestrians who were students at Florida International University, because crossing 8th Street is like taking your life into your hands, and they've had too many kids get hit crossing that street, so they got some grant money from the federal government to build this pedestrian bridge, and it's a whole new concept. You know, this is a bridge that was, you know, built at the site versus just being dropped down. And apparently something went terribly wrong. There was a catastrophic collapse, and there have been a lot of cars pinned underneath. We know there are fatalities. They're not telling us how many, and injuries. A lot of the working men on the project have been taken to the hospital.
Now, Joyce Kaufman, when was that bridge first constructed? Because, again, we think of bridges possibly collapsing. Maybe it was built at the turn of the century. It was over 100 years old. It seems from your initial description of it, that was not the case.
No, it was just installed in a few hours. It's this new accelerated bridge construction, which is supposed to reduce the risk to the commuters and the pedestrians. They did it over the weekend. So, you know, today is Thursday. We're talking about something that was erected primarily on Saturday and Sunday, and they've been working on it ever since.
So it's like prefabricated and then brought all together and soldered and glued and whatever they have to do in order to put it up and get it to function, all within the course of one weekend.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened. And, you know, it's state-of-the-art. It's a company, the construction company, MCM, is a family-owned and operated business down here, which, you know, has a phenomenal reputation. Their projects are safe. They get done on time. And you know, this is just one of those quirks that will require a lot of investigation. I mean, NTSB is down here already.
Let's take you back to yesterday, the national walkout of high schools to try to encourage more gun control measures, obviously led by the students at Parkland High School, who saw 17 of those who were so close to them gunned down by crews, 16 injured. Here is David Hogg, one of the many young spokespersons who have emerged after that tragedy that affected America.
The main way that I could see the momentum really continuing is if we had a walkout every 14th until legislative action is taken in the United States Congress by these politicians that haven't taken action for so long, so that we can stand up as Americans and fight for our lives when no one else will.
Now, first off, Joyce, I've had many calls up here at WABC suggesting that David Hogg, his good looks, the way he's been able to present, almost looks like he's from the old show Beverly Hills 90210, but that he's really a crisis actor. He's actually a student there, correct?
Yeah, he's actually a student there, but he is the son of a former FBI agent, and he's a pretty scripted young man. He didn't just appear on the scene the next day and deliver some passionate statement from his heart. He was reading off of the script, and he may have written that script. I'm sure he did. But I wouldn't say that this is as spontaneous as the media would like to play it out to be. And that doesn't minimize his ability or his right to present the case for the students. I'm just a little concerned with all the activist groups and gun abolition groups that are funding these efforts. If it's all about the kids, then why was there barely a mention of the 17 lost lives yesterday? It was all about gun control and legislation. That's not the same thing that we were told. I was told it was an apolitical event, and then I got to watch, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi up there with their, hysteria about how I'm number one on the NRA's hit list. I mean, this has become so political that people don't feel good about it.
Have the adults co-opted the young adults in regards to how this movement now moves on?
Absolutely. And that's the tragedy of all this, because I think there are a lot of serious young adults who are high school age or even college age who would like to talk about this issue in reasonable terms, but they've been co-opted. They've been, just turned into, Bloomberg robots. And it makes the rest of us look at it with a much more jaded eye than we would have if it was allowed to be organic and really youthful. I mean, Curtis, I don't know about you, but like I have grown children, adult children. But when they were teenagers, I didn't follow them. They had to follow me.
Now, I noticed that the governor signed off on gun control legislation in the state legislature in Tallahassee. Immediately, the NRA sued. Do you explain why the NRA is suing the governor, who was such an NRA enthusiast?
Because, there's a flaw in this law. I mean, you cannot say that you're going to put a limitation on age for the purchase of a gun and then, hand that same gun to an 18-year-old who joins the military and train them specifically in how to kill. What about an 18-year-old who has a family or has a business and wants to protect it? Are you going to deny him the right if he goes through the background check, if he is, a competent adult who doesn't have any mental health history? I mean, I just think it was the wrong legislation. It was rushed because everybody felt terrible. And we never make good decisions when we do them that way.
Was it properly debated? Was there flawed discussion about it? Or in typical fashion, we've seen up here in New York and New Jersey, legislation is introduced at 11 o'clock at night and passed at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Bingo. That's exactly what happened. And that's the kind of stuff that leaves us with weak laws that don't work. I mean, obviously, there were so many mistakes made from the Broward Sheriff's Department, from the FBI, from the Department of Children and Families, from the Broward County School Board. I mean, there's a lot of blame to go around, and yet it made everybody feel better if we could just say, well, take the guns away and this won't ever happen again. It shouldn't have happened. We already had enough stuff in place to prevent him from getting that gun. We just didn't follow through.
Do appreciate that. That's Joyce Kaufman once again, radio hostess on WFTL in Miami. I don't know, Florida seems to be cursed this year, right? First, it was hit by the hurricane. Then we had the shooting by Cruz, the Nutnik, in the Parkland High School. Then the national movement, which we saw take place yesterday, in which young people left their schools, high schools and junior high schools, for 17 minutes. And now the collapse of that footbridge that was just put up over the weekend, state of the art, in which the whole reason that it was constructed was so this would not take place. There's got to be a curse on the state of Florida.
Curtis Sliwa, the deepest knowledge of the city.
If you're the next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
Utah's been around that track, so it's not just gonna happen like that. Cause ain't no hollaback girl, ain't no hollaback girl.
Oh, good choice, Justin B. Love, a miracle, a miracle. Gwen Stefani, who I think actually spent some time in Staten Island. Do me a favor, make yourself actually worthful here to the program and check that out. But that's Hollaback Girl, which is about high school girl rivalries. Generally, you would get on the scene of whether it's two girls or two guys slugging it out or grabbing each other's hairs or pulling each other down. And if you happen to be a parent, you would intervene and you would break it up and try to figure out what the hell was going on. Well, not in this case. In fact, at Mill Basin, at a junior high school, last month, mother intervened, but actually threw gasoline on the fire. Wow. So she was basically sicking her daughter on the girl instead of breaking up the fight. On the line to give us the nitty-gritty details is Christina Correga. She's a reporter for New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News. Thanks for jumping on board, Christina.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So explain the scenario. Did this take place on school grounds or in the schoolyard or like out in the street?
This was on the school grounds, right next to the school in the playground.
And she is basically urging her daughter to get in there and beat the living daylights out of the other girl?
Yeah, it was her and another unidentified woman who was jumping the young lady in the red jacket in the video. And at certain points during the fight, I guess she didn't like the way her daughter was getting at the girl, and she decided to throw some blows and pull at the girl's hair.
Now, how did you find out about this?
So the attorney on the case, Sanford Rubenstein, called me up to let me know about this case and this video. And, you know, I interviewed the mom of the victim in the red jacket. Her name is China Tempo. And, you know, I learned about what happened, and they're up in arms. You know, there's a whole lot of other stuff going on with the case, with the parents involved. They're all seem to be of some sort of, like a gang, if you will. And it's unfortunate because these are parents.
So you're saying that on one side of this battle, this family feud, so to speak, one family versus the other family, the one family just seems like they're comprised of gangbangers?
Well, it's mostly two families. So there was a fight back in January between the young lady in the red jacket and another friend, where the girl in the red jacket, China, was protecting her friend from two bullies. The families of the two bullies is the woman in the subject of the video, and then there's another family with another young lady, and they have been terrorizing these two girls on social media and posing threats against them in the school, and it's just become this huge firestorm of parents becoming children, if you will.
Sure, and while the parents were jumping in on this and getting their licks in while encouraging their children to strike out some more blows, what was the Department of Education doing? What was the security at the school, this public junior high school, Roy H. Mann, doing?
Well, for the first fight, the administrators broke that up back in January, and we understand the students were under some type of disciplinary action for that, and that's according to the lawyer. The school won't give us particular information about the student records. That's under some type of legalese, if you will. And then after the fight in February, the school called the police, and the school safety agents broke up the fight as well, and then we had an arrest on Monday of the mother who was seen in the video pulling the child's braids and kicking and punching her.
Now, Christina Correga of the Daily News, are these kids, these combatants, are they still going to school? Are they still having to eyeball one another each day?
It's unclear. The Department of Education won't give us any information about the students, like I said before, because of legalese purposes. But I do know that the young lady who was attacked in the video is still enrolled in that school, and we have reason to believe that the other students are also still involved in the school.
I do appreciate that, Christina Correga, reporting this story, which took place a while back. If you want to see the video, just go to the New York Daily News website. It'll direct you right there. And you will see these two girls getting it on. And then all of a sudden, the mother telling the daughter, go for it, hit her harder, as she's pulling the girl's braids and jumping in and stomping on her to boot. My Lord, we thought that as parents, you're supposed to be the adults. You're supposed to be the mediators. You're supposed to be the ones who send each other to separate corners and try to resolve the dispute. In this case, the parents appear to be worse than the kids.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Guardian Angel founder Curtis Sliwa.
Really try to help our cause.
WABCRadio.com.
I forgot how good this group was. Cranberry Zombies, its lead singer just having passed. Boy, what great videos accompanied this music. And all from the land of era, era, era. Although I never saw some guy chasing a leprechaun looking for a pot of gold. No, I didn't see that. But oh boy, is somebody here willing to stir up a lot of problems right before the main St. Patrick's Day this Saturday, in which thousands will be marching up Fifth Avenue. In fact, it's Bill Ervolino, columnist for The Record. Thanks for joining us once again, Bill.
Good afternoon.
So I can see the Italian in you is coming out where you're trying to claim that St. Patrick, who cast the snakes out of the land of era, was in fact Italian.
Well, there's always been conversations about this. And I mean, I think that, you know, there's pretty good historical records to say that his father was a Roman diplomat, but you know, the question comes in is, what was Rome at that time? The Roman Empire was all over the place. St. Patrick was born in Britain, most likely, but did not get to Ireland until he was a teenager. I think he got kidnapped by pirates or something, and they brought him to Ireland. And whatever, I don't know. I don't find Irish people are that upset about this. I find other people are more upset about it if you bring it up. But it's been discussed for a long time.
Well, could it be that when you were bouncing it off of a group of Irish folks handling your focus group, where normally they might have accused you of geographic appropriation, that they were half in the bag having downed a few Irish car bombs, Jameson, and they couldn't really make out what the hell this Italian was saying?
Yeah, or some Hennessy, man. I think that, look, I there's always been this. I went to Catholic school. You know, I went to Holy Cross in Flushing. So you got your Italians and your Irish right off the bat. That's basically the whole school. And you realize from a young age that you're actually very different. And so it's kind of funny how different, you know, that you can be. But most of the Italian boys, at a certain point, they see those Colleens with the blonde hair and the blue eyes, and they go crazy for a while.
Oh, yeah, and remember the freckles. Remember the freckles. That defined them as Irish.
Right, and then the Irish guys get a little ticked off about that, and then everything settles down, you know.
Wait, you left one thing out, Bill. Not only do they get ticked off, but they knock your schnoz right down your throat because they know the Italians, you hit them in the schnoz and they fold like a cheap camera. Right or wrong? Come on, Bill.
That's true. Yeah,
okay, all right.
I hit him with my shillelagh once in a while. That really does it. I think that if you, Well, one thing, you know, going, they have really good parties, these Irish people. They really know how to party. And I've gone to a lot, you know, every time something happens, it's a confirmation, a communion, there's a big party. And their Irish food at these parties is like, it's they have this veal rotini, it's very good. This veal milanese, eggplant, this, and every time I go, it's always Italian food at one of their
Bill,
parties.
Bill, I remember the first Irish wake I went to, which was more like a party. And remember, I grew up on an Italian side of the family by the age. You walked into the funeral parlor. You heard the women up front in all black wailing away. You couldn't hear a pin drop. If you had to have a conversation, you went outside. It was 40 degrees below zero. So we go to this Irish wake. They're like having a party. They're high-fiving. And my grandfather, Fidelio Bianchino, said, these guys are barbarians. They're total barbarians. They had this guy that I worked with is dead, and they're having a party around him.
They do. They do it up. It's like New Year's Eve without the ball. Italians, we just have, like, you know, we're too exhausted from running, screaming, throwing ourselves on the ground. So we're more sedate, I think. But I go, I mean, I remember as a kid, you know, when you're an Italian kid, you go to the day after you're born, you go into a wake, they take you in a little basket, because everybody's at the wake, there's nobody to watch you, so they take you there, and then you go in, and it's pretty quiet till the fighting starts. There's always like a brother and sister.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
10 years, two cousins going at it in the parking lot, you know.
And so, if you happen to be in a marriage, of which there are many, Italians are married to Irish, how do they settle the situation of whether St. Patrick's was really from the land of Era, Ireland, or he was originally Italian and kidnapped, as you mentioned, by pirates, pirates of Penzance, and then all of a sudden imprisoned and taken first to the UK, and then he liberates Ireland from all the snakes.
You know, there are a lot of Irish and Italian couples, and they make beautiful children together. I'm sure you've seen them. They work it out somehow, you know? I mean, whenever I do a show and I start talking to people and it's like Irish or Italian, and then the guy say, I'm Italian, my wife is Irish, but she's Italian by injection. I'm like, what does that mean? Like, first time I heard that, I was like, what does that mean? I was like, oh, all right. but they work it out, and you know, it's a little nerve wracking because, you know, Irish people have tempers, and Italians have arms, you know, so it's like.
Well, and the other thing about the Irish, as we approach the main St. Patrick's Day, because let's face it, the month of March is just one big celebration of St. Patrick's, is that Bill Arvelino, an Italian, you have beef with him, and then he forgets it. All of a sudden, the Irish, it could be 2 months later, you're sitting down, right, at a bar, a gin mill somewhere, and the guy brings up this disagreement you had 2 months before. You don't even remember it anymore. And it's not because you have dementia or Alzheimer's. And you say, hey, Patrick, where are you getting this from? And the guy wants to fight you.
Yeah. I know.
What do you think that depression is from?
I don't know. That cloud that hangs
over their heads.
I think that I remember when I was a kid, you know, in Flushing. I lived in Rosedale, but in Flushing where I went to school, the Irish kids, a lot of them were in gangs, and they would have, you know, we're meeting at three, you know, this weekend, Saturday, whatever. And this was very different from me because the Italian kids, we were just like, you know, staying home and eating. And I don't know how serious it got, but this was part of like, this was just part of their ritual, I think.
Well,
and I think in the Bronx, too, there was a lot of Irish.
But Bill, they wouldn't stay home eating because Irish food is as bad as English food. Right? I mean, you think you would stay at home and be eating bangers and mash? I mean, that stuff makes you want to vomit.
What are bangers, anyway? It's sausages?
Well, it depends on what kind of banging we're talking about. But, oh, yeah, sausage. Yeah, you know, then they have the little army beans there, you know.
I don't know. I like it. I actually, corned beef, if it's well done, I'll have it, like, once a year. I tried making it once. I thought I could make it in an hour if I cut it up, and it was disgusting. It's really got to cook for, like, 6 weeks, and then it's perfect.
Okay, so, Bill, this is what I want you to do for a column next week.
Okay.
On St. Patrick's Day this Saturday. I want you, like the Italians used to with the Department of Transportation, because remember, everyone who used to lay out asphalt was Italian.
Right.
And what they would do is, because you had to paint the white line green going up Fifth Avenue.
Right.
The Italians, the Weisenheimers, would paint it orange.
And that would drive the Irish nuts because those were the colors of the Protestant Irish from Northern Ireland and would set them off. So Bill Arvelino, to maintain the tradition of how the Italians would get under the skin of the Irish on St. Patrick's Day, I want you to go up Fifth Avenue, tell them you're doing this just as a test, and with your paintbrush and your paint can in hand, paint that Irish green line orange.
Perfect.
And then if you survive the process, we'll be reading about you in the record.
I'm going to the paint store now.
Yeah, maybe in the obituary column. Anyway, if you want to see Bill Arvelino's many columns, and they all give you a great buddy belly laugh, you got to go to NJ.com. Oh, excuse me, that's NorthJersey.com. That's North Jersey, not South Jersey, NorthJersey.com.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
There's nobody that knows this city better than Curtis Sliwa.
WABCRadio.com.
So get out your feet and jump around. Jump around. Jump around. Jump around. Jump up. Jump up and get down. Jump, jump.
What are these? The one-hit wonders, House of Pain, all these guys with the shamrocks. Kissing the Blarney Stone while hitting each other in the mosh pit with shillelaghs in advance of St. Patrick's Day. But, you know, it does remind me of a time, 1992. Very important date for me. Because I ended up taking 5 hollow point bullets in the gut on the orders of John Gotti Sr. to John Gotti Jr. to his henchmen in the Gambino crime family. And luckily, I must have had the luck of the Irish because I survived that day on June 19th, 1992. But 1992 was also the last trial against John Gotti Sr., the capo di tutti, the head of all organized crime, and his prosecutor was the Irishman John Gleason. And they went to trial, it was St. Patrick's Day of that year, in downtown Brooklyn, the Eastern District. And John Gleason, naturally, like all the Irish, were wearing green ties. John Gotti Sr. comes out of his jail cell, dapper as he always was, wearing an orange tie, which was an F.U. to Gleason and the other assistant prosecutors, some of whom were Irish. Well, you know how that story turned out. As Sammy the Bull Gravano ate the Parmesan cheese and John Gotti Sr. was sent triple life without parole to Marion, where throat cancer took him out and gave him a horrible death. Oh, I loved it as he went straight to hell without an asbestos suit. But guess what? They were all back, all the Gotti clan. The evil seeds were back in one of the foyers of that same downtown Brooklyn federal court of the Eastern District. There were parents, grandparents, cousins, aunts, uncles, and they were outside of the 8th floor courtroom kissing each other's cheeks, showing their support for the defendant, the grandson of John Gotti Sr., John A. Gotti, who was being sentenced to 5 years for torching a car after being sentenced previously for selling oxycodone hillbilly heroin out of his grandmother's house in New Howard Beach and out of a tattoo parlor that he had on Cross Bay Boulevard. But isn't it interesting? This is what John Gotti Jr., his uncle, had to say about his nephew.
It is what it is. It is what it is, the Gotti name. However, he took responsibility for what he had done. He's going to go to prison like a man, not like some of these government cooperators, okay? And that'll be that. Hopefully, he'll come out a better man.
Yeah, better man. Living up to the 3 generations of degenerates that the Gottis have hatched and produced, who have gone to jail for murder, arson, racketeering, shakedowns, extortion, a series of crimes against all of humanity. So if you notice, it's like it's in their DNA. It's like they're degenerate criminals, and they all high-five one another as they go in and out of jail because it's like that in the Gotti clan. Produce another Gotti, and I guarantee you they'll end up doing federal time, as they should.